is on Senate Bill 557. Senator Miller, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 557. I have some testimony I'd like to read. No.
Well, we scheduled it Monday.
I understand. Yes, sir.
Could he please identify himself? I'm not sure who.
For the record, the state Senator Randy Miller,
oh,
13.
Good. Well, I wasn't sure.
Good to see you. Mr. Chairman and members, this is a bill that distinctly would make the program implementation of the Education Act for the 21st century optional district by district. This, as you know, Mr. Chairman, is not a new concept. I have been speaking and hearing this proposal for several sessions, but I think in light of recent noted criticism, growing concern among our citizens, that it makes this bill even more timely than it ever has been. In my view, this is the essence of something so many of us talk about as if we admire, and that is local control. This bill is the definition of local control because it would allow, as I say, districts that believe that this Reform Act is meritorious to pursue it with incredible vigor, and they can retain every provision if they so desire. If a district opposes this act for whatever reason, then they may jettison the requirements of this act. If a district, as my own has told me in Lake Oswego, there are certain portions of this act they find beneficial. There are others they would just as soon do without. The adoption of this proposal would allow that kind of flexibility. And I know, Mr. Chairman, you are certainly an admirer of the Education Flexibility Act, the EdFlex. And this, I think, has some similarity with that concept, allowing local people to make decisions they know will best suit their children. It is amazing to me that there is opposition to this concept. What it says to me is that apparently those people in the education bureaucracy wouldn't dare allow this concept to proceed for votes among the districts. The fear being, apparently, that it may not be something local districts favor. If people felt that the Education Act for the 21st century was such a terrific proposition, then they should have no fear of allowing local districts to entertain this idea, to discuss it, and to wonder whether or not it should continue to be fully implemented. Like you, Mr. Chairman, I have stated my support for education funding at a significantly higher level than some in this building. And so this should not be seen as any movement away from a high-quality education. And this should be, I think, more correctly viewed as an opportunity for citizens at the local level to determine what is the best education for the people they care most about, and that is their own children. And I have a lot more confidence in the decisions of people at the local level, of parents, than I do of people who are all collected in this area to determine what is the best future for our citizens all over the state. I want to report to you, Mr. Chairman, over the years that I've had this bill under consideration, it has troubled me to receive some phone calls from educators, of which I used to be one, who have been so intimidated that they have been not allowed really to speak in opposition to this act. And I can remember some of those calls last session, and it was just frightening to think that people were so in fear of the retribution of whomever was in control that they could not speak freely about their own profession and how they might be better. I have received a number of letters just within the last few weeks from frustrated teachers who say they are now reduced to simply teaching how to take this test as opposed to teaching children. And they feel robbed of the opportunity that they thought when becoming a teacher. And again, I just reflect on my own brief experience as a teacher, and I want you to know that I would far more have relished the opportunity to work with children to develop their thoughts than simply to be up there as an administrator for some task that somebody thought was appropriate. And so I do thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity to testify on this bill. Again, I encourage you to pass it. Those people, again, who embrace and endorse this act, if they believe it is everything they say it is, should not feel threatened by the opportunity for citizens to speak on it. That opposition can only indicate that they aren't so sure people like it. So I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Senator Miller.
We welcome you here today.
I just become paralyzed in his presence.
Members and Senator Miller, we are just scheduled for a hearing today, and so we can get back to you, and I would like to hear the other two invitees, and particularly since Chairman Sinceri will be here with us until 1:30 when his House Education. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, may I just say one thing?
Certainly.
And that is, Senator Miller, one of the things, I'm a teacher also, that grieves me about this whole thing is how mummified the teachers have been in this process, the frontline workers.
Mummified.
They are scared to death. And I know that the Salem Kaiser teacher spoke one time at a hearing, and the next day in every box it was, don't go to the legislature and speak, a letter from one of the administrators, and unless we know what you're going to say. We wanted pre-knowledge of what, because this district supports school reform. They were scared that, I think, that some funds were going to be cut off or something. But the teachers that we have hired to carry out this act deserve to be heard and listened to.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
And I'd like to invite
many. Appreciate you.
Mr. Chair, if I may ask one question.
Just one question, certainly.
Thank you. Senator Miller, you and I served together on the Joint Ways and Means Education Subcommittee together, along with our good chair, and we've had the opportunity to hear a presentation on the quality education model. And what are your thoughts about that model, its implementation, and should we be pursuing that model, in your view, in light of your opinion about the Reform Act?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gordley, I happened to have a conversation yesterday with one who was one of the principal architects of that model, discussing with him if there was a way to quantify how much the Reform Act was costing and what part of the model that would represent, and he was unable to provide for me a particular figure. I would say I want to continue to maintain the notion that, as you are, as Senator Hartung, as a member of this committee, is interested in improving education. What I'm not personally convinced of is that this particular Reform Act is the right way to proceed. I say that having been among, I think it was 55 members of the Oregon House of Representatives who voted for House Bill 3565. It is my belief that those of us who voted for that act were trying to do something to improve the quality of education in the state, but not necessarily wedding ourselves to that particular proposal. Again, I stress to you that the importance of Senate Bill 557 is simply to provide an analysis of how it is working, how teachers feel about this, and just generate what I think would be a helpful discussion. So I appreciate your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you,
Senator Miller. Good to see you. And so, Superintendent Bunn, Mayor Katz, would you please come forward?
Well, here comes trouble.
Welcome to the committee, to the two of you. And as you know, we're under invited testimony on the hearing on 557, but basically, well, in addition to that, your comments on that are certainly welcome, but an update on the act and how you think we are proceeding. We started last Monday with Ozzy on that very same question. Next Monday, we have some teachers and students coming on an update on how the act is working.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Stan Bunn, Superintendent of Public Instruction with offices at 255 Capitol Street and all of us a moment to allow the mayor to introduce herself. We appreciate the opportunity to be here and make comments both about Senate Bill 557 and about the status of the act, and then to answer any questions you might have. I think it's helpful to look first at those activities that predated the 1991 Act. There was a great deal of work in the 1970s and the 1980s on how we move quality education forward. Senator Duncan, who was superintendent during a period of that time, as well as others, could relate to you the efforts that were occurring that were really ground laying for the 1991 Act and provided very substantial help. I think it's important to also realize that before we passed that act, Oregon schools were in the top third of the schools overall in the nation. They were relatively good compared to other schools in the nation. However, it was very clear as we looked at the quality of education that Oregon's parents and students wanted, and the quality of education compared to education worldwide, that we had a responsibility to move forward, to move our students in this state to the top schools in the world. And that act, in more than just a quantitative change and a qualitative change, said, as we passed it, Oregon will make a commitment to provide for students in this state a quality education that can match any in the world. Now, I need to stress as I say that, that is not an easy task. It's difficult, it requires time, it requires resources, and it requires effort. And it is going to have, as a part of it, stress that we need to relieve as much as we can. There was another very, very important thing that this act attempted to do and is doing, and that is to make the quality of education uniform throughout the state of Oregon, so that if you were in a school in Burns or Portland, you knew that you were getting the same type of quality education, a very powerful tool for students that we didn't have before. Now, I think at any time in this process, we can ask ourselves the question, do we want the best schools in the world? Does that provide for us, in fact, the best economic opportunities for our families, for our students? Does it provide the richness of life that they want in terms of educational quality? Does it provide a greater and better involvement in community and a better ability to compete in the rest of the world? And I think all those answers are yes. And to say that we want to retreat from that quality, I think we would have to answer the question, why and what would it gain us? Every poll that has been taken of parents and every bit of traveling I have done around the state of Oregon reaffirms that parents want higher standards for their students in school. They want higher standards in writing, reading, math, science, those very areas we're working with. Senator Miller suggested that carrying out this act has an ability to destroy or diminish local control. I want to suggest to you that specifically in 1995, we said while we will maintain high statewide standards, we will allow the local community to develop their own curriculum in their own way to assure that we meet those standards so that every school district in the state of Oregon could choose the way based on their geography, the makeup of the community, and other things, the best way to get there and attempt to do what they needed and wanted to be able to do. And I believe that we are moving on a course that is very, very powerful for those students. Now, we are currently moving on the math, the reading, and the writing. We have those standards done. The testing processes are there. Teachers have been trained in those processes. We are working now on social studies and science. Now, one of the things that I think we failed to do as well as we could is listen carefully to overload concerns of teachers. For example, I brought to the State Board of Education in their last meeting a recommendation that the work samples be frozen at their current level until we studied work samples after the 5 years' experience we've had to determine whether the level that we initially set without the experience there was still the level that we should carry out, because teachers were telling us in large numbers that we needed to have a review of that work sample situation. The board froze the work samples in their meeting so that we could study that issue. They have, through a subcommittee, taken up the review of social studies and science to see if there should be delays in parts of those to meet the timelines that have been expressed, and we will continue to put that forward. I can tell you with absolute clarity that the teachers I know and work with and the teachers I don't know in this state have had no fear of any kind to express the very positive feelings and the very negative feelings that they have about the Education Reform Act. And one thing you don't need to worry about is that the thousands of teachers in the state of Oregon will somehow be afraid to clearly express their pro and con attitudes, because they're doing it aggressively, positively, and in a way that we need to respond to, both in terms of the positive and the negative. I believe, as we carried out this process, that teachers over time have come to embrace, in ways that some did not initially, the vast majority of teachers, a support of education reform and the higher standards. And what they're pleading for as a part of that is that we do it rationally, thoughtfully, carefully, and with time frames that make sense, and with a commitment of resources. And I believe we can and will do that. Now, anytime you do a project that is this major, I don't believe you can do it without some mistakes. And I want to acknowledge what I think are some of the mistakes we've made and some corrective action we can take. I believe there's some confusion about the Act. I believe there is some fear in the Act, and I believe that some of the timelines haven't worked as well as they could. The confusion can be removed, I believe, by, among other things, talking in plain, simple language about what we're doing. When Chrysler Corporation talks about safety, they don't start by talking about anti-lock brakes and rack and pinion steering. They talk about safety, and they say safety is what we're about. And then after they've made that clear, they talk about rack and pinion steering and anti-lock brakes. We started by talking about the SIM and the CAM, the mechanical thing. We should have talked clearly about the higher standards, how important it was to students, how much the public and parents wanted it. And we need to talk in clear language. The finest speech I ever heard on education reform and the act we're embarked on is an elementary school teacher from Lincoln County who said, "I'm here to talk today about getting back to the three R's, writing, reading, and arithmetic." And the most aggressive and most successful way we're doing that is through the Education Reform Act and the quality of that act. And I think we can carry out, through the Department of Education, in coordination with school districts, much clearer language than we have had previous to this time. I think we also need to alleviate the fear that is a part of this act for some people, and that is a fear of failure. We need to give incentives. We need to be sure that we've provided those opportunities for students to succeed. And I'll give you briefly my concern that unless we assess students in a rational way that allows them to do repeated assessment as they want and need it, instead of one assessment at the end of the 10th grade where they can get no remediation, we make a mistake. If the Ways and Means Committee supports our assessment effort for local assessment centers that allow middle school students to challenge tests, new students to take the tests immediately, and students to take the repeat tests so that they can adjust and classes can adjust, will have that kind of concern taken care of. Assessment has been an area of real concern. We had a meeting in the Department of Education yesterday where we were looking at, is assessment better and testing better in January? There are some arguments for it there. At the end of the year, there are other arguments for it there. We made a decision to, through what's called our listserv, to send to superintendents and to send to the OEA and to teachers a request that they look at the time for testing and get back to us on when the best testing time is. Now, that's a simple little thing that can help remove their lack of control over that area. But if you look at all of the pieces that we are carrying out, we are moving on with testing and teaching and training that school after school, I have observed students stand up and say, "I've learned more in 3 years than I ever did under the, or excuse me, in a year than I ever did under the old system in 3 years." Time after time, students testify to that result as a quality result. Now, there was a suggestion that we should not fear having this examination, there's been a suggestion that we should not fear putting this out to the voters for a decision. I want to suggest this. One of the things the public needs in this process now is surety, stability, certainty, and staying the course. They don't need a legislature to decide at 1 year we're going to spend huge resources to change the quality and then 7 or 8 years later reverse course because we have problems that are corrective and can be dealt with in ways that they need to be dealt with. The quality of this act, the reason for it, the need for it, the benefit of it exists just as much today as they did in 1991. And if we continue, we will be, I believe, very proud, you as a legislative body, us as people who supported and worked for this, in an act that we can be proud of, continue the course with, and have tremendous benefit to our students. And I would urge you to stay the course with this process.
Thank you. Mayor Katz, welcome.
Chair, thank you. Members of the committee, I couldn't have said it better than the superintendent just did. Stay the course. We're making the most significant changes in our system of education since the day we became a state. This is hard work. It means changing an educational system, which is probably the hardest thing to change of any of our social institutions. The Act started with the following reasons. Though there were some young people that were doing very well, if you looked at our dropout rate and looked at who was dropping out of schools, it was very evident that we were leaving a whole generation behind. And that, so that we wished that 70% of our young people would go on to a community college or a four-year college and university, they were in fact dropping out of school or going to work totally unprepared. This act, as you all know, and Mr. Chair, you are very important in the formation of it and carrying out its vision, was to make sure that every child meets high standards of an educational system that's benchmarked to international standards so we can be the best in the world, and to make sure that every child succeeds. Now, what does that mean? That means that we need to set the standards, which have been done. We need to develop the curriculum, which is happening, and we need to make the assessments tie in to the curriculum. And we need to give our young people the opportunity to meet the standards, and not all of them will meet it at the same timeline. And the notion originally was that you can come in and out of meeting the SIM exam or the SIM standard at any time in your educational career, and that you take bits and pieces of that and come back for reexamination over and over again if you so choose. So it wasn't one test and only one test. The other, if you recall the act, there were learning centers that were to be established to make sure that young people that were having some difficulty in being left behind for a variety of reasons had the opportunity to achieve by spending a little bit more time at schoolwork. Some schools around the state are doing incredible work. Saturday academies, a longer school day. Some of them have even added on extra days to their school year. Unfortunately, the legislature repealed the notion of over 210 days for the school year because of the resources and lack of resources. But we can't do what we've been doing in addition to this in 180 to 185 school days. It's just not possible. And so the stress that we're hearing about is that's one of the reasons that people feel overworked, overstressed, because the time frame is much too tight. It had some bumpy starts. We spent several years arguing outcome-based education. I'm glad to say that at least from where I'm sitting now, that argument has subsided. We saw a lot of resistance to change. Educators are, many of them, very slow to changing an institution they love so dearly.
I resent that.
Excuse me?
I just resent that.
Well, I'm sorry. Okay. She listened. Well,
she's not a teacher, and she shouldn't put down teachers.
Please continue. It is an institution they love, and it is a way of doing their work, and it is hard for any of us, including elected officials, to change the way we operate and the way we think and what we hold dear. There was an ambiguity. It was complex. We had a rather tight timeline. But the notion of a tight timeline was to move everybody forward and move everybody as quickly as possible. Some schools, because of the leadership within the school, especially at the principal level, moved ahead very quickly. And when you visit those schools, you know that our young people are going to succeed. They are excited about the opportunities that's before them. They are challenged by the more difficult work that's before them. They are challenged by the notion of portfolios in addition to assessment exams. They are even more challenged by the notion of the certificate of advanced mastery and school to work and work to school and back to school again. We have businesses now who are in our schools providing the kind of curriculum and the kind of support that many of our high schools are looking at, and to not only to tie the academic curriculum with the skills that they're going to need when they go out to work, but to invite the business community as partners to their educational community. Every child has the right to succeed. And where it's happening, it is very rewarding. I remember that one of the arguments in opposition to this act was, Representative Katz, you're tracking youngsters. I submit to you, we were tracking youngsters before the Education Act for the 21st century. We were tracking them right out of the classroom. They were leaving. And we made decisions that some were going to succeed and some weren't. This act sets the standard for all children to succeed. And because of that, we need to place resources in our schools to make sure that the child who has a little bit more difficulty learning has the ability to succeed as well as the child who's able to succeed very quickly. And that we give those youngsters the opportunities to get the best education that we can provide. Stay the course. It is tough work. It reminds me very much of Senate Bill 100. We all stood up and praised Senate Bill 100. We talked about protecting farm and forest lands. We talked about quality of life and making this state a livable, beautiful state. And now when we actually have to produce to maintain our urban growth boundaries, people are beginning to ask questions. We are now producing, and people are asking questions. And this gentleman sitting next to me has an incredible job to bring the state together, to tell parents and students and teachers what this is all about. The F that I gave, the failure was in our ability to communicate this to the state and to our partners who are going to deliver this product. It was not with this particular act. Stay the course. Give him all the support that he needs, in addition to some resources to make sure that we can be successful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and to Superintendent Bunn and to my mayor, Mayor Katz, City of Roses, Portland being an international city that wants to produce students that are capable of functioning in a world that is becoming increasingly small. Mm-hmm. I want to first say to Mayor Katz how much I appreciate, how much many of us appreciate your leadership and your vision that brought us the 21st Century Act. Aside from that, appreciate your leadership in the Coalition for School Funding Now. Just want to say that on the record. I would also add that I appreciate you clarifying what you meant by assigning an F, and you were referring to the Willamette Week article, I know. And because I know your hard work on reform over the years, I had a sense of what it was you were trying to communicate. I was able to read between the lines. But I would also say and repeat what I said on the Senate floor the other day, that an F is surely deserved by the legislature. Again, I'm expressing my view here, in that we have not stepped up and provided the resources that are necessary to fully implement reform. We've not provided the resources that teachers need, the resources that are needed for teacher training in our institutions of higher learning that produce the teachers. We haven't done that. I'm even hearing now some questioning of, you know, should we invest in the assessment centers that Superintendent Bunn has referred to in his comments. I'll just make this short and sweet and say that we have not done our part. And that's our failure. It isn't the kids' failure. It isn't the teacher's failure. It isn't somebody over in the Department of Education's failure. We just didn't do our part. And so the reckoning is now. And I agree with you that we must stay the course. I'm one of those folks who at the beginning had the concerns about tracking. I sat in any number of community meetings and heard the concerns of parents and expressed my own around tracking. But I've moved past that, and I believe that this is a course that we should not only stay, but we need to find a way to make sure that every legislator fully understands what was in the original act and what it is we are in the process of achieving in our different communities around the state. That is not fully understood. We're still operating with myths and misunderstandings, and that troubles me because another part of the communication that we've got to figure out so that we can get beyond the confusion and fear that exists right here within the legislature is how to fix that, how to straighten out that communication that we need to have with ourselves. So any ideas that you have about how we can do that, I'd like to hear. And with that said, I just want to thank you both for doing what you do.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Senator Shannon and Senator Fitzgerald.
Why would we repeal it? You're not repealing it. The bill before you said, let the local districts choose. And what would it gain? It would gain the kids' education. And I just have to say this right now, that I thought that the last superintendent was out of touch, not having been an educator. And I can't believe, Superintendent Bunn, that you and I know the same teachers. I just can't believe I was at a school board meeting last week, and I got a standing applause because I said, it's the only thing all night, it's a budget hearing. If you want to help your school, because they were having to cut, which the kids at Albany were up here telling us, they're cutting out AP because of this school reform, what it's taking. And 10% in this budget, and sure, we'll get an F if we don't do it, because all they want is more money, but always more money, but 10% of every school district's budget now is just for substitute teachers. Because the teachers have to go out during class time. The timelines are so, this would allow a school district, this bill, to move dates out so the teachers could be trained in the summer. The kids don't like it when their teacher's gone 10% of the time. The teachers don't like it, and the parents don't like it. And for you both, neither having been an educator and teaching the kids, and know that you're going to be gone 10% of the time, it doesn't make for a good education. That's why you want do every encouragement you can to have the teacher there with kids to bond and to teach them. I could tell you the school district, I could tell you the teacher, but I'm not going to. But just this morning, people brought it to my attention that a fifth grade teacher got a copy of the test, stopped teaching what he was teaching, taught to the test, to this assessment that was so all important. He's now a little embarrassed because he got the highest, his kids in the whole district. Now they're wanting to know, what did you do? Well, what did he do? He taught to the test, as a few others. Because, and nobody wants to teach fifth grade. Neither one of you said that. The fifth grade teachers are all concerned because of N3rd. And really and truly, what I say and what you that are have the rhetoric for this, but the reality isn't producing your rhetoric, what it doesn't matter what you or I think. What matters is what has a record of success. Let me tell you what happened in South Salem High School literature because of what the mayor said. As all children will succeed. The literature teacher told me the kids used to do 27 stories. Now we do 6, we hope, because we have to read all out loud so that every child learns, we don't leave anybody behind. And the fast kids, they can't, they're all mixed up. They used to could have a fast class, and now they don't have a fast class because of this, every child will learn. And all I'm asking for you to, you mentioned Lincoln City. Now, am I to believe, because one teacher said we're going back to 3 R's, that we will go look at the standardized achievement scores at that school, and Lincoln City, or wherever it was in Lincoln County, that school will be off the charts, or at least increase. All we're saying is, I think it's wrong, and you do the kids of Oregon a disservice when you test the kids in Portland against the kids in Medford, or the kids in Salem against the kids in the Grand, because they're going to compete with the kids in the whole world and the United States. And we need to test our kids still. We do all that we think is great, but we have to test them to a national standard. And show me the school district where their national scores are going up. Doesn't matter. I shut up and you show me the record of success. And when you say the business community supports this, they better. It used to be that parents were the consumers of education on behalf of their children, and now it is the corporations and big business on behalf of their bottom line, because they want teachers, their words, not mine. They want students that have been trained, not educated. They want students that have been trained to work collaborative, insisted those words stay in the law in 95. And you talk about, we're just not communicating, the mayor said. Oh my gosh, the e-board gave the Department of Ed $1 million to help this communication thing go. And what did they do? They produced and wasted $1 million on sheep herder ads. Do you know what that would have done if they put that in the classroom and materials that would have helped the teachers? I tell you that kids, great kids in Woodburn, my district, their parents are on the school board. What did they do the day of the assessment in 10th grade? They skipped school. A bunch of them. And the teachers, they're upset. I don't know what teachers you're talking to, but it's obviously Superintendent Gunn, that in those districts, if this bill were ever allowed to go to the people, they would say, keep it. It would vote in those districts, keep it. We love it. Our kids are just the brightest in the world. And Mayor Cass, do you realize that us competing with the national standards, and did you read the paper? Our math scores on an international level are going down, down, down. Even Oregon.
Thank you, Senator Castillo.
Thank you. I wanted to join Senator Gordley in thanking you both for your leadership on behalf of all the kids of Oregon. You're just two of the strongest supporters of our schools, and you're constantly talking about how we need to help our schools do better by our kids, and I really, really appreciate both of you, the leadership that you both provide for all of us here. I wanted to follow up on the funding of the reform effort, because as you know, Mayor Tass, it passed at the same time that Measure 5 started taking effect in our state and really started changing how we were able to fund our schools. And I would like for you both to maybe comment a little bit about how much the lack of funding has played a role in what we have been able to accomplish in the reform. I would imagine even if we had funded them adequately, there still would have been some bumps to, you know, in the implementation. But how big a factor has it been for our schools and teachers and students?
It's really been astonishing to me that teachers and administrators and parents have carried out this act to the level of quality they have with the shortage of funds. I've given the example more than a few times that it would be like a Boeing Corporation leadership coming down to the floor and saying, we're going to start building a 787 tomorrow. We don't have the engineering plans. We don't have any more money for you, but you've got to build the airplane. And they built the airplane, and it flew. And teachers have made that happen in classrooms, and they made it happen without money. It has had its toll. If you travel this, talk to elementary teachers, many of our finest elementary teachers are burned out and leaving, and we need to deal with that. We need to fund at a level today, and I'll say without shyness, that's $4.95 billion, that will allow us to adequately continue this act and do it in a rational way that allows parents, teachers, and students not to be overloaded.
Staff training, staff development, absolutely key. If you're making such a major change, and 3565 and the bills later were major changes, you've got to prepare our educators and our principals. So you've got both the management team and the education team, and those that melt together, trained and developed. The development of the curriculum, the assessments need to be tied to the curriculum. So then when that happens, if you teach to the test, as long as the test represents a curriculum, there's nothing wrong with that. Social promotion? You don't agree with
no
me.
One. Oh.
I didn't know it.
No,
social promotion, people were a little nervous about ending social promotion. The city of Portland is going to give $1 million to the school districts in the Portland area to help in social promotion, but you can't just end social promotion and hope for the best. You have to intervene in the youngsters' lives during the months where they, with all due respect, need to be in school. If they're having difficulty, that costs money. Unfortunately, this year will be voluntary. If it was mandatory, it would take more than $1 million for all the school districts in our area. A longer school year costs money. And I can go on and on in terms of identifying the social pieces that are necessary within the school districts to help meet some of the other needs that our young people have other than the academic needs as well. A year-round school. I mean, it's insane today to think that we can take 3 months off. Single head of household, both parents work, they have two jobs. Our youngsters ought to be in school during that period of time and break up their school year at other intervals. So there are a lot of things that cost money that we weren't able to do because of that, the frustration.
I wanted to follow up with one other thing that was mentioned here that I was going to say that I, too, have heard teachers be very open in talking about the reforms, both the positive and the negative about what's been happening for them in our schools, and we're going to hear from some next week. One teacher, I remember speaking with a teacher in Cottage Grove that was at the high school, was really working on the reform efforts there in the STEM, and there was a lot of controversy at the school about that. And I remember him saying that, right when they were all so excited about doing all these changes, the class sizes started getting bigger and bigger, and it just got in the way of them being able to try and do the reforms the way they wanted to implement them because it did take so much more individual time to do them, and with so many, more kids in the class, he wasn't able to do as much as he, really wanted to do to make those forms real for everybody in his school, and the frustration with that, too. So,
I think we have clear patterns around the country of successes of allocating resources. the conservative governor, George W. Bush in Texas, did not say, I'm going to declare one day that third graders who don't pass reading will fail. What he said was, I am willing to put millions and millions and millions of dollars into the reading effort so that we can have students who know how to read by the time they leave the third grade. And that's the model that is neither conservative or liberal. It's common sense. And it's the approach that we really need to use. I wanted to answer Senator Gordley's question on the communication. Sure. How do we remove the confusion? As I observe the communication we carry out on the Education Improvement Act, there is not a unified voice from the Department of Education and schools throughout the state on a message that is understandable in a common discussion. I believe we need to change that. Any entity, a caucus in the legislature, Willamette University, the education system, need to be able to present in a unified way clearly what it is they're about, and I think it's the responsibility of the Department of Education to lead that.
Thank you, Senator Courtney and then Senator Duncan.
Mr. Chair.
Well, Senator Courtney.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
Well, the one thing, you probably said this over here in a different way, but I just carried a bill that I got beat on, and it was called School Leave, Allow Leave to Pay for Parents to Be in the Schools During Regular school hours, school activities. I really do believe that whether you talk about the Education Reform Act, existed or not, or STEM or CAM, or the many things you talked about, that I think surveys show this, and the older I get, the more I realize it, is that, and I don't know whether it's not the mayor's responsibility, it's not the superintendent's responsibility, or the school board, or teacher, they can only do so much, and you can only allocate, you can allocate all kinds of resources talking about Governor Bush. But this parental thing is the number when you poll people. It stunned me. I didn't realize until I started to do research on my little bill. That is the number one thing out there that affects people. A better partnership or more involvement of the parents in the schools. And I don't mean in a meddling way. I mean in an everyday sort of way. It's constructed by, it's ahead of even resource issues. And I don't quite know how we get there because it's not totally our responsibility, but I cannot emphasize, when you give your speeches, and all of you, those of you for different reasons will be asked to speak on this issue, Vera, because she helped, she was the chief architect of this, and I think Larry Campbell, and now because of her remarks in the end of the week, of course, the Superintendent of Education, I'm hoping just a few sentences you could put in there, you know, that we can slow down, our time frames. We could come up with maybe some different standards. We can tweak it. But I would hope, if you believe I'm right, if you don't believe I'm right, you got to do what you got to do. I would hope you get into this parental involvement thing in a way that we start to get fine ways, because I think my wife told me she stopped teaching after 10 years at Whitaker Junior High School. She got burned out because of parents. And it wasn't parents screaming at her. It's that parents just weren't there. And I really think that's a much bigger issue than a lot of us realize. And I don't have the answer for it, because I know some, it's dysfunctional families for some, but for some, it may be lifestyle things. So it's just a little issue. It's going to make a little point that money, yes, you're the certified smart people on standards. You know what you're doing. You got the answers to please in your discussions. Talk about parents and how we can maybe, during that school day, during those school activities, just having that parent present and helping them. So and I don't know much more about this, and I support the bill, as you know, Vera. I'm there for it. I've been pounded about it. I'm going to do the same things, whatever. It's just a little comment, and of course, it's going to be, you know what I'm talking about the other day, when I was on the floor and got my brain beat out. But the fact is, I think it's still an issue in this discussion. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting me that rave, and I'm sorry I didn't mean to be ahead of you.
No.
I owe it to you because you're my own.
Mr. Chair, I want to respond to that.
Okay.
Senator Courtney's absolutely right. The bill should have passed. In the city of Portland, we've done two things to be a family-friendly city. One is to provide daycare facilities, child care for our police officers in the Justice Building, and the other one is for the rest of our city employees. The other it was to encourage them to participate in the SMART program and give them flex time. What I learned by doing that flex time it creates a little bit of a problem. It's not, and so we are now moving toward changing some of our collective bargaining contract language to allow parents to participate in the schools
with their children or volunteer in the schools during the school day, because it is absolutely critical that they get involved. And it was one of the most important elements of 3565 was the parental involvement. So you're absolutely right. We want to do it because we want to set the standard for businesses to do the same thing.
Mr. Chair, I guess I want to comment on a couple of things. And with all due respect to my good colleague to my right, when you're talking about experience, I looked around the room and I could match anybody in the room, and that's just because I'm old. But I'm in complete agreement with what you're saying. You're on target. You've not been in a public school classroom as a full-time teacher, but you're right on. All kids can learn. It's our responsibility to see that that happens. The program has every potential to be successful. It has problems. And those problems need to be addressed. But right now, what I'm seeing happen, all of a sudden, I'm seeing a confidence in the superintendent that I see teachers having confidence in him. He's spending time with them. It's the communication with parents. It can work. I mean, it can work. And it won't work when people say it won't work. If you decide it won't work, I can assure you it won't work. And it's an attitudinal kind of a thing. The principal, and I think the mayor said it very true, the principal sets the tone in the school. The superintendent does the whole work. And I think the teacher is the key to it. Teachers are afraid right now, and we're part of that problem, folks. We keep talking about accountability. We're gonna look at the test scores, and we're gonna decide who stays and who goes, what kind of promotion you get, what kind of salary you get. That's nonsense. That's our problem. We're the problem here. We should cut that side of nonsense out. Because that's part of the fear that's out there with teachers. Teachers are afraid when we start talking about that. And I said the same thing. If I were teaching, I'd say, you let me have a good class, I'm going to look good. But I don't want those kids over there. Can you shuttle them off to some other classroom because they're going to pull my scores down? And you're going to have that kind of thing going. It cannot evaluate teachers. There are years I would love to have been evaluated and have my salary based upon the results of that particular class. There are years when I would not like to have been evaluated because you just get different kids, different situations, and it's very different. So we need to keep that in mind as the legislature. And, of course, that's my fear of probably the legislature messing with it. And we send the wrong signal out all the time. And we're sending a bad signal out today that this legislature is even thinking about. And I, with all due respect to my great, great my great friend back there and colleague, all of a sudden, I don't want the papers tomorrow to say, legislature considering throwing the system out. If we send that message out to teachers, once again, teachers are going to say, why bother? Because they're going to mess around with it. Why not wait until they finally decide what they're going to do 10 years from now? Then we keep, and that's, folks, that is part of the problem today. Because that message has been going out constantly. And you hear teachers say, well, why do it now? Just wait till it comes around again. We need, and you're right, we need to stay the course. We need to put it in the hands of the superintendent and hold him accountable. I love holding the superintendent accountable. Boy, it's more fun to be up here, Stan, than it is down there, I'll tell you. But give him a chance. Make the thing work. I think he's on the right track, and it can work. It's a whale of a hard job. Mm-hmm. It's a tough job, but it can be done. And we need to quit fooling around with the nonsense we keep playing with all the time. We've got a system in place, let it work, and go to it, and then let's fire the superintendent if it doesn't work in a few years from now. But I think it can work.
Okay, let's see, we've all had a chance to speak, except me. I would like to say just one other thing. Thank you both for coming back, and I want to find ways to respectfully disagree with my colleague from Brooks and even my colleague, the former superintendent.
I'm a senator, yes.
Oh, your colleague, too. But I agree with what you said, Mayor, that teachers are resistant to change. And I should not be offensive, but the status quo works. And I tell you, in the work that I've done on 4 years on charter schools is a perfect example. It's why teachers do not favor charter schools, because they have, you know, prospered under the status quo. And that's not to condemn them. And I would say also that I have a daughter and a son-in-law who both teach fifth grade in Beaverton School District, different schools. And I would disagree with
Senator Duncan about the fact that, you know, we should not be sending the message that we're considering options to the Reform Act. If this Reform Act can't withstand the light of day, I was sure we ought to get rid of it. But we ought to be continually be in examining, because the big criticism, I wasn't here in 91, 93, but came back in 95. We spent hundreds of hours on 2991 because it wasn't even brought before the legislature in 93 session. So that's why you're here, and thank you for coming. That we want to examine how are we doing. And the other thing that I would add, and this is my bias, because I have in my immediate family, and the son and daughter, the son-in-law and daughter live next door, as a matter of fact. I hear every day about what's going on in school reform, but I tell you, they're not ready to walk away from it because they see there is an opportunity to improve the quality of education for all of our children. So it's not right to say there's a lot of burnout, a lot of frustration out there, but I can bring before you many, many teachers that will say, you know, please keep track of how we're doing and make the changes that are appropriate without reducing the high standards. So thank you for coming. Senator Gordon?
Yes. You know, I just think it's really important how we use language. And one of the things we need to move away from are some of the blanket kind of statements that we all make sometimes, like all teachers are not resistant to change. Some teachers, perhaps, but not all. There are teachers in my district who support education reform. They want it to work, and they're trying their best to be a part of that change. So that's just my caution to all of us, just to be careful about, as we develop these new ways of communicating, let's not put the blanket judgments out there. We need your help. I want to go back to Senator Courtney's fine bill, which failed on the floor this week. It's Senate Bill 486. I think we need your help communicating with AOI, which came out with a strong statement against the bill, which I found very disappointing, and I've already said that to their representative in this building. If we're talking about parental involvement being one of the cornerstones of reform, then we need business. We need their help making that happen. So if I could ask the two of you to take a look at the bill, which is 486, is that the right number, 486? And give us some help with that. I mean, it's Senator Courtney's, he put his heart and soul into it.
That's okay.
And, you know, like he, I was very disappointed to see that go down. Help us, please.
Hey, thank you very much. And again, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I'll close the public hearing on Bill 557 and open up a possible work session and public hearing on 344A. And Representative Lofton will be here in a moment to testify. But I'll start with Deborah Barnes, please. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed. Yeah, you can proceed, Mary. Go ahead and proceed. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Hartung and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Deborah Barnes. I am the telecommunications instructor at the Saban Skills Center in the North Clackamas School District. I have taught broadcasting to high school juniors and seniors at the district's technical high school for the past 5 years. I was a broadcast reporter in Oregon for over 10 years prior to my career change to education. I appreciate Representative Jane Loken for sponsoring House Bill 3444, which I hope can help in safeguarding our classrooms, our teachers, and students prior to a gun or knife being brought into the classroom. They come from rich families. They live in poverty. They live with a mom and dad, or they live with grandparents. They are the children in our classrooms who are displaying what is now being called explosive behavior. This issue is important to me because teachers and administrators in Oregon schools need additional tools to help safeguard our classrooms and our students. The issue is what can be done to prevent tragedy from happening before it does. And what can we do to help students who need additional resources to become responsible adults? Historically, in many school districts, when a student faced disciplinary action, like a suspension, he or she would usually be told to go home and not return for a couple of days. The student often saw the punishment as a vacation from the classroom. This should not be the message we send our students. Students who make verbal threats to kill or injure another human being should not only face disciplinary action, they need to spend time being evaluated by a mental health professional to make sure the emotional problems are checked. I don't think I need to give you specifics about the number of students who have been expelled in our state because they have threatened to kill or injure others with a weapon. You have seen the headlines and the nightly newscasts. Educators, both teachers and administrators, deal with this on a regular basis. I am asking you to make sure our classrooms, our teachers, and our students are safe by allowing school officials to remove students who exhibit violent tendencies in public schools. Those students should not be given just suspension or time off for bad behavior. They should get the chance to meet with a trained counselor to deal with what is causing aggressive violence. If we deal with the problem when it surfaces, we may not have to adopt rules and laws aimed at keeping guns out of our classrooms in the future. Fortunately, many parents are willing and able to assist us when we bring these concerns to their attention. They work closely with us to make sure the students' best interests are addressed. However, in some cases, for many different reasons, some may not be as understanding about the situation, and that is when we need additional resources to help the students who need the help immediately. I understand there isn't funding available for most school districts to help provide long-term counseling for troubled students. I understand the constraints of school boards and legislators. But as a parent of three daughters and as a teacher, I am worried. I don't worry about my own safety as much as I worry about teachers who often deal with students going through difficult problems. You never know what may happen in the classroom. This proposal is just one additional tool for teachers and administrators in Oregon. I don't have all of the answers as to who will pick up the tab for the mental health counseling, although I would be more than willing and happy to be a part of the process to make sure something is done for these students. Thank you for your consideration in this matter. I would be more than happy to try and answer any questions you may have regarding this matter.
Thank you, Deborah. If you just stay right there, and Representative Loken will join you. Representative Loken, welcome. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Senator Harkin. I'm Representative Jane Loken from Milwaukee, District 25, and I'm here to testify with Deborah on House Bill 3444. And she is the person that inspired this bill. And I was pleased to have her come forward with her ideas because this has been of tremendous concern to all of us. And how to help teachers deal with these very troublesome situations. In the House, this bill passed out on a 59-1 vote and also out of committee with a 10-0 vote. So it met with very well with the support in the House, and I hope it will do as well in the Senate. It directs school districts to set policies for managing students who threaten violence or harm in public schools. The policies include staff reporting methods, and that is added through an amendment, the Dash 3 amendment, which we introduced as a result of some of the non-classified employees coming and saying we do need a way to do this reporting, and so this is added to satisfy that need. And the policies would require an administrator to determine whether such a student needs evaluation before he or she returns to the classroom. I think that the shocking events at Thurston and Littleton remind us again that when young people show some infatuation with violence, it can come to fruition. So we've got to act promptly and before they bring the weapons to school to hurt. This bill doesn't target any specific age group. The process can be applied at any grade level. And again, it covers any weapon, not just guns. More than a reaction to weapons in school, it's also meant to help and empower school administrators and school employees to intervene before serious harm is committed. And also, not just for that. Sometimes you can bring a young person in and think that they are going to become violent because of the way that they are acting out. And they find that there's another need in that child's life. So by bringing that child forward early on, before they spring into violent action, sometimes you can detect an underlying need that can be helped. So that's what the bill is chiefly about. And I believe that this, it's really heartbreaking that in America we have such a rash of school violence. And but in nearly every instance, I understand at Thurston that the teachers and staff or classmates had observed early clues to a brewing problem and simply acted, for instance, in the Thurston incident, the counselor had interviewed the child and sent him home to his parents. This bill says stop before you send him home. Let's take a real look at this situation. So I'm hoping that the committee will support House Bill 3444 with these dash 3 amendments. And I'm also interested in having a conceptual amendment, if I can find it here, added. Do you have a copy? Thank you. Because I think that on page 2 where we talk about licensed counselors, I think that doesn't quite express what we need there. I think what we need are licensed mental health professionals. So on, because we have counselors in school, and they are licensed to be teachers, but not necessarily to have the type of evaluation that we're asking to be considered if necessary in this bill. So we would conceptually, with your approval, amend that to licensed mental health professionals and eliminate licensed counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists. And that would be on lines 3, 4, and 8. Page 2.
Thank you. We don't do conceptual amendments here. We'll have to send it to LC and we could reschedule it for a work session Monday now. If you really want those, and if you want the conceptual amendments in the bill, that's what we'll have to do.
I see. Well, that hold up. I know we're all under a schedule here.
Yeah, right. That meets our deadlines for working on that Senate bill or House bill.
Uh-huh. You feel all right with that?
Mm-hmm. Okay, questions? Senator Courtney?
Yes. Thank you for bringing the bill, Deborah and Representative Loken. I support the bill, but I don't mean to make noise like a lawyer, but since I just took a terrible beating on and I also just got passed, not by myself, but to the help of this and the other, school safety zone bill. Let me just explain to you what can happen to you. I'm reading here in your bill that came over from the House, and I'll pass it out this way if you want me to, but let me just tell you what can happen to you. 27-28, the last two lines of the bill on the first page, immediately removing from the classroom setting. So let me tell you how that gets you in trouble. You got a kid who's walking down the hall, or a kid in the home football game sitting in the stands saying, I'm going to kill that other quarterback, and I mean, I'm going to kill that big kid. First of all, I don't like him to begin with. He was mean to my sister. No, I'm going to kill him. Well, clearly, and I hate to make noise like a lawyer, is that a classroom setting? Or the kid's walking down the hall in the school, is that a classroom, yet the kid down in the cafeteria says, you know, I'll tell you, before this day's over, that teacher, I'm going to punch that teacher out. I am going to punch out the teacher. So the kids walking down the hall, clearly, is that a classroom setting? I once again don't think you can put everything into law, and I understand that. I'm trying to do the best I can to show you the pitfalls you get yourself into when all of a sudden this thing ends up before the Oregon Supreme Court. And believe me, I know what I'm talking about. I've been beaten about in this week big time. So there's that issue. I think you are right with another person, because it wouldn't mean just a threat to a student. It could be a principal thing, or I assume you mean any human beings alive. I also wonder if you mean if the kid makes the statement, let's say it's a kid, off school property somewhere, does that give you the right when they get on school property? Since the remark was made off school property, it was not involving somebody that would be in the school, but it was like, it was scary enough what was said that that kind of person, the others, they're out somewhere with a bunch of kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to kill such and such. Okay, the person they're going to kill is not an employee of the school or a student in the school, but within an hour, they're in the school. And somebody in the school, well, the students know, or let's say they were even with a teacher or a coach.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't want to get too screwed around here, because then they go here to go. But I'm just telling you what can happen. So I'm willing to leave it in there, but you got to know those are the kind of words that lawyers play games with or can get you in front of the Supreme Court as vague or not specific enough. And that's all I wanted to say. Look, I'm not all for your bill. I'll pass it out that way. But you got to know that I'm just sort of bobbing and weaving a bit when I read that. Okay? I hope you take it right, not as a negative. I don't mean it negative at all.
Not taken that way.
Okay.
Chair Senator Courtney, I appreciate those remarks. And I would be happy to talk with you, too, about some amendments to that, since we might could send it back for an amendment.
Yes, if you would do that, because we are going to go to the council on your, it would be -2 amendments, and we can very easily do that at the same time.
I don't know what the -2s are. Someone else may have some amendments not used.
I called your
mine
conceptual
the
amendments.
Yeah.
I called your conceptual -3.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, we have your -3.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
Right.
Again, I don't want to stop the bill from going around, folks. So please, don't go banging around, because I don't want to. I think this is a wonderful idea. It's very neat. I congratulate you. I happen to know Deb. We go back to D.C., and I like that local. Well, that's a long time ago. That's what I mean. I'm trying to help. I'm not trying to hurt. I'm trying to help. Also, there's someone in the audience who is very much of a person on juvenile rights. I can just see her back there looking at me with these eyes.
Yeah,
fire.
Right.
We're going to pounce on it, Peter.
We're going to have her in just a minute.
Oh, well, maybe that's what I'm going to hear.
Yeah, right. Okay, we'll move on with Senator Duncan.
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank my representative, Representative Loken, and Deborah Barnes for bringing this forward, because I think it's a good measure, and I really want to see it. And I'm in agreement that it probably needs the word school setting changed in there or something, because it is too narrow to say the classroom. And I just was going to comment, just so Senator doesn't think he's the only one. Deborah used to wake me up many mornings, right, Deborah?
I will too.
You know, it's
you're terrifying. I don't know what that's going to be on the air.
Well, I do want to explain that.
Yes. It's the archive for a while.
That's right. I want to be sure it's in the archive. In her radio days, many mornings I'm still in bed, the phone rings, and there's Deborah on the phone. Would you please comment on something? And you're on the air, so you're bright-eyed, wishy-tail, and here she's got you on the air on KEX. But many a morning with her on the morning.
Oh,
good to have you here, Deborah and Jane.
Any other comments or questions for the two? Okay, thank you very much, and Kathy Osborne, please.
Thank you very much, and I think we'll get out of here since this seems to be
deteriorating. But you will work up some further amendments to go with your conceptual boundaries.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're
welcome. Kathy, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Osborne from the Juvenile Rights Project. We're actually in support of this bill. I know.
Really? So that's why you marked up against it here?
Well, I'm sorry, marking against. I think I made a mistake. And let me first address Senator Courtney's concerns about the hallway, the off-school premises, and the football field. As one of those lawyers that like to play with words, and I'll let you know that one of my, in my first year of law school, first semester, one of the classes we had to take was essentially playing with words, and we spent, we'd spend class, the entire class session talking about placement of commas. It was not my favorite class. When you first talked about the hallway, I was pointing to subsection B, which is the overriding section of this bill, which says that the district school board shall develop policies on managing students of violence or harm in public schools. So I would think that the policies that the school boards could develop would include the hallways and perhaps even the football field during the athletic event, if the athletic event was sponsored by the school. I think that my lawyerly reading and members of people in my office might disagree with me, but my lawyerly reading of then subsection capital A would be if that threat took place in the classroom setting, the school would be able to, that the policies could allow for immediately removing the child from the classroom setting. That is important because special education, federal law for special education, limits the ability of schools to remove students from classroom settings if the actions that are taking place in the classroom setting is a manifestation of the reason that they're eligible for special education. I would think that the policies the school board to develop would allow, if it's to remove them from the classroom setting to calm the situation down or whatever, would allow that to happen with even the special education students. But I don't see that subsection capital A is a mandatory thing. I see that as something that the school boards could consider as part of their policies, but the policies overwhelmingly are to develop policies to manage students who threaten harm or violence in the public schools. So I don't think you have a problem with the threat that's made in the hallway as long as the policy covers that the school board develops. I don't think you'd have a problem on the football field as long as the policy covers the football field. You may have a very strong problem if the threat is made on an off-school premises and then the school, once that student tries to get, goes to school and it's reported to the teacher, well, a student, you know, when we were at the 7-Eleven earlier today, the student said that they were going to punch out this teacher, now they're on school property and the school tries to get involved, I think you would have a problem with that, with the policy covering that, because it would be the school board making a policy about someone's actions that occurred on an off-school site, and I don't think the school board would have the authority to monitor or even punish any activity that took place on an off-school site. So certainly, as a lawyer for the child who is getting punished under those circumstances, that would be the point that I would certainly raise. But I would raise that no matter what the policy said, because I don't think any school would have the ability to punish a student for something that took place off school grounds.
Mr. Chair, just a comment on this. It's interesting the plans have changed because, and I agree with you, but if I was going through my administration courses and taking a school law, at that time there was the old case law study, a student en route home from school made a derogatory remark to the principal of the school, and this tells you it was a long time ago, he called him old man somebody, and the next day at school the principal punished the child, and it went to court, and it was held that the in loco parentis concept, that en route to school until you arrive from your front gate till the return of your front gate, the school had jurisdiction over you. And that now, as I said, that was in the 60s, and that has evolved and eroded, I guess you might say,
and no longer would you have that. I'm not trying to be a lawyer, but it was an old history case law that you really had that death. But the most practice has kind of gone by the wayside, I think.
Thank you. Other comments?
Sure. Point of information. I'm sorry I was so long. I was over and waiting to testify on a very important bill to my district. But how many of us did this? And I'm sorry about my crude drawing, but this is a tank, okay? I don't know how many times we used to draw a tank. My tank is a little odd shape, but that's all right. And we drew guns. And a young man, you probably heard in the news recently, was removed from school for drawing a gun. Not drawing a gun. By drawing a gun. And we can create a situation where it's almost hysteria. And hopefully we have some boundaries here. I leaned over and said to the good senator to my right here, how many of us have said, we're going to go out and crush your team tonight. We're going to smash your head. Now, are we talking about, as a part of a football team going out to play, or some other group of people, are we going to be infringing on that and sending our football team to the psychiatric examiners? I mean, you have to be really careful here. Kids will be kids. You will do things like this. I don't think you'll ever take those violent tendencies in the sense of objects of violence away from little boys. That's what they are. And they're little aggressive, and we have to train them. But that doesn't mean... I would object, first of all, somebody suggested they're going to send my child to a psychiatrist because I know they can administer drugs. I mean, I'd be too happy about that. I didn't like 4 million children being subjected to certain drugs in school every day. I mentioned that as a remonstrance the other day. So tell me what's happened relative to this bill to reassure me.
That's true. Senator Courtney, I would like to say, first of all, times changed. Many schools have changed their alma mater in their logo because it's offensive. I played football in the hills of West Pygott, Virginia, which is one of the roughest places in the world. You play football in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and really, I'm going to tell you, you don't even know what violence is. But I made the statement I would never coach kids the way I was coached. I was brutal. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying to you is, I don't think you can do the same drawings. I don't think you can say necessarily the same things that you could say when I was a kid, because we've come a long way. And what I'm saying is we're not going to allow kids to say certain things, even in a kidding way anymore. I can't allow my 3 sons to say certain things in a kidding way. It was said by me or by me or to me when I was at Charleston Catholic High School and St. Anthony's Grade School in Charleston, West Virginia. So times have changed, and this gun thing is so serious that I have to admit, we are going to, at times, maybe go too far, or there will be a situation where a kid is brought in. I've got to be very proud of you, Senator George, who you say, you know, the kid never intended that, but somebody was large enough that they brought him in because of the drawing. I have to say, I don't know if your comfort can be improved. There could be a drawing just like that, that would, from a certain kid, we have some teacher gravely concerned and immediately the kid would find himself in front of the assistant principal. I think that's just, that is where we're at. We're there for a very good reason, trying to be sensitive to violence, sensitive to signals that a kid signals that something may be wrong, that they were trying to intervene. So I'm not sure you can get this. The peace of mind you want, except from the discussion here, there are going to be situations where maybe a kid is brought in under this bill who truly meant nothing at all by this drawing or her drawing or anything else. But the times are here now, and we got to live with it.
Let me get the balance, folks, if we could, on this. This is kind of a debate. We were watching the other night the Portland School District talking about what are the school, was that Wilson with all the bomb threats? Practically daily bomb threats, regular bomb threats. They're almost reached the point of ignoring them now because they've done so many searches and this sort of thing. So what is this going to do if we're ignoring bomb threats?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dorff, perhaps I can answer that question. First of all, in terms of times of change, that's one of the media myths. Times really haven't changed. A recent book that came out by Professor Franklin Zimmering entitled Marriage and Youth Violence, which goes through and looks at the statistics of juvenile violence from the period of 1980 to 1996. What Professor Zimmerman, and this is from the through the MacArthur Foundation research on adolescent development and juvenile justice, what Professor Zimmerman found is that juvenile violence in 1997 was no greater than youth violence than juvenile violence in 1980. And in the past 20 years, there has not been a dramatic increase or decrease in the arrest rate of juveniles for violent acts. What we have is a situation where certainly the media has made it look as though our youth today are a lot more violent than they were in the 1980s. The research is just not showing that's true. However, and I want to say however here, because although that is not true, that the arrest rates have gone up and the violence has gone up, what has dramatically gone up is gun homicides by teenagers. Okay? When you look at the homicide rate by teenagers, when you look at the non-gun homicides, that has stayed almost absolutely equal, I mean, across the 20 years. What has risen dramatically is gun homicides by teenagers. Now, homicides are still down, so, you know, when you look at statistics, you have to look at numbers total are down. The numbers for the non-gun homicides are staying the same, but the numbers for the gun homicides are staying equal. So, in other words, the numbers totally are going down, but when you look at comparatively, it's because of the guns. It would be going down larger if it wasn't for the access to guns. But
primarily gang-related incidents. The incidents actually on the school district, I think, probably are down. I can remember through elementary school, junior high and high school, we had an organization called the Lucky 13. It was a Chicano drug gang, and literally stabbings, beatings constantly, and then retaliation of the other ethnic groups, groups against them. I've asked teachers who teach in that same school district who are friends of mine, and they said, does that go on anymore? I've asked them, does this happen anymore? And they said, no. That's all settled down. That kind of thing is gone away.
Well,
maybe a scuffle or a push
on that. Sure, I'd like to hear.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just
wanted to say I was listening to a talk show about this, and they said that there were more people killed in schools in the 80s, but it was inner city.
Mm-hmm.
And now when it's coming out to the suburbs, then everybody's having a big hullabaloo. And how and you don't hear about it in the cities, because they put metal detectors, you know, at schools, and they really controlled it. And there's less gun deaths in school now than there were in the 80s.
Well, Chair Hartung, Senator Shannon, that I've also seen that statistic. Coming out of the, I believe it's the Juvenile Justice, or I can't think of the last J, it's JJJ. I've seen that statistic, and that was another startling statistic that they have is three times as many children are killed in their homes by adults than are killed in the schools by guns. But, you know, again, I need to say, however, if we're going to try to stop the violence in schools, to try and stop it at the school door, you're going to fail. Unless you make the schools as secure as a correctional institution, somebody who wants to bring a gun to school, whether that person be a student or a non-student, is going to get that gun into a school, just like they're going to get that gun into any other building, perhaps other than a military complex or a correctional institution, because of the amount of security that's around those areas. I don't know whether we want to put that level of security around our schools. But when you look at the statistics also for special education, the students that are not right now being identified for special education services, in other words, getting those services to try to stop mostly behavioral problems, because those can also get somebody eligible for special education services, are minority males. Now you look also at the population of those people in our prisons. What do you see? You see a large percentage of minority males. The main reason that our office supports this legislation is what we're hoping is if a student is acting out in classroom and somebody's taking a look at them, maybe, just maybe, they'll identify that student as needing special education services in order to get the kid back into school and back into the classroom with appropriate services. And if we can identify those students in the younger years of needing special education, we won't have to pass laws like Measure 11 to lock up those kids when they become 15, 16, and 17 years old. I've practiced juvenile law now for 9 years. My specialty is the serious juvenile delinquent kids. When I get a case, one of the first things I do is I get the school records. I can't tell you how many times I can look back at those school records and see that my client was acting out in a violent way in kindergarten, mm-hmm. and nothing was done. Was acting out in a violent way in first grade, and nothing was done. Was acting out in a violent way in second grade, nothing was done. Acting out in third grade, in fourth grade, in fifth grade. All of a sudden, this kid gets to middle school, and they start suspending this child for acting out in a violent way, something that this child was taught through their elementary school years. The kid drops out of school, and soon their file lands on my desk. You know, there's nothing I can do at that point to make up for the fact that that kid lost their elementary and their middle school years. All I can do at that point is try to get that child the services that can be provided to the child at that time to try to make sure that that trend does not continue. So I see myself as kind of the last gatekeeper. But I don't like the number of kids that are coming up to my gate because, let me tell you, I can't hold them all back. So if this bill can do something to make sure that those kids are stopped in first grade, in second grade, and third grade. So I'm not reading in this bill we're kicking these kids out of school. What I'm reading in this bill is we're trying to figure out why they're acting out the way they're acting out, and maybe, just maybe, we can get them the services that they need so we don't see them on my desk, and we don't see them in our penitentiary. And that's why the Juvenile Rights Project is supporting this bill.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And, Kathy, I might just add, I read an in-depth article on where our world is heading, and they were lamenting, you know, the 11 to 17, that's where the problems are, and for the reasons you've mentioned. But the other thing that they mentioned that had never really occurred to me, look at the number, the total number of kids that age we have today as compared to 20 years ago. They likened it to an invasion of the barbarians. And we've done a halfway decent job, as we see, you know, that in our struggles to keep it under control. And you mentioned security at schools, and I want to do something about this, and I'd appreciate your reaction. Were you here when Dr. Hill Walker was here, and he talked about, you know, one of the things we must do, new schools, design them so we can securitize them. And what about, and I'll never forget the comment of the principal at Littleton. He said, well, no, we don't have detection. We don't want our school to be like a prison. But Hill Walker said, aren't our students entitled to the same sort of safety that we are entitled to when we get on a plane to go riding, when we go to a court, or when we go to the Supreme Court? So what is your position as a juvenile rights person on securitizing the schools?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually do know Dr. Walker very well. In fact, I've worked with Dr. Walker on several of my cases, so I understand, and he's very well, and I have a lot of respect for him. I think I probably need to disagree to some extent with what he had to say. There are ways to build buildings, I think, that can make them more secure and more able to be secure than some other way. We don't need to put up high fences. We don't need to put bars on the windows. We don't need to make them look like mini jails. In order to keep our children safe in those schools. You know, I'm not an architect, but it seems to me I walk into juvenile detention facilities, the new OIA facilities, and those are secure facilities. But they're also built in a way that it's not like walking into the Oregon State Penitentiary, okay? So there are ways to build things, I think, that you can make them secure and make them safer for the people that are there all the time without making them into mini prisons. My concern about making our schools into mini prisons is twofold. First of all, children will react the way that they think adults perceive them. In my experience, and that's what I've been told by the experts. So if you label a child, you're a bad child, you're a stupid child, you don't know what you're doing, that child's going to take that to heart and think, I'm a stupid child, I don't know what I'm doing. If you start putting children into jails every single day, and it looks like a jail, it feels like a jail, I would worry about the way that those kids are going to perceive themselves. The second problem that I would have is we have to remember that the violent tendencies by children are committed by a very small percentage of the actual number of kids that are out there. It's something very difficult for me to remember in the job that I have, so I always try to make sure that I stay in contact with those normal everyday kids who are just being normal everyday kids who don't want to go and blow up buildings, who don't want to go and kill somebody, who don't want to sell drugs, who don't want to be members of a gang. They just want to be normal everyday kids. And what you hear from those children is, I don't want to be tagged as being a member of a generation that is comprised of only violent children. They shouldn't be tagged by the most negative aspect of their generation, just like I wouldn't want to be tagged with the most negative aspect of my generation. And I don't think any generation that's preceded me and any generation that's going to come after me would want to be tagged as by the most negative aspect.
Sure. I go every time to the courthouse. I don't perceive myself part of a violent generation. I feel secure when they look through my purse and all that. And same thing with an airplane. I don't equate it to the mean people. I equate it to safety.
Chair Hartung could understand, and I'm sure you would. But would you do that if you walked into that building every day and you spent 8 hours a day in that building every single day? And that was essentially one of the centers of your universe. I mean, for school, for children, especially for older children, their social life revolves, for the most part, around that school.
I'd like to answer that.
Sure.
And that is, when my nieces and nephews were growing up in the 70s, it was a bomb. They were scared. They were afraid of the bomb. They were afraid, you know. And today, the kids are afraid to go to school. And I think, and they want reassurance that nothing is going to happen to them. And I have to answer your question, honestly, the kids I talk to would rather feel secure than all this other stuff about being tagged with the most violent people, because security, and know they're going to see their parents at night, is very uppermost in these kids' minds.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. I do have a question about the bill on lines 9 and 10.
Yes.
Let's see, a school employee or school volunteer may use reasonable physical force upon a student, etc. And I missed the earlier presentation by Representative Logan, and I apologize for that. But did we get a definition of what is reasonable physical force?
Sure.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Member Gordley. Actually, we did not have anything to do with that portion of the statute. That is existing language that was included when Elsie drafted the bill. So that is something that is there today and has been evidently and in the statute.
And we, what is the definition? Does staff know or?
Chair Hartung, Senator Gordley, off the top of my head, I can't give you a word-for-word definition. I do know that it does not include corporal punishment, because obviously we have not allowed corporal punishment in the school. I believe that the reasonable physical force is what, I think it goes to a subjective standard, what that person felt was reasonable at the time to control the circumstances. And what that goes to is, you know, a teacher's walking down the hall and two guys are fighting. What does the teacher need to do to pull apart that fight and break it up? If it means essentially holding the child around the arms and picking one of them up and carrying them off, that certainly is going to be determined, I think, to be reasonable physical force.
Okay, we do need to move on, and so we will schedule your bill with your amendments for next Monday. And if any of the members have any questions, please talk to Kathy or Representative.
I'd like to talk to you.
And I'll close the work session with the hearing on her bill. Thank you. 3444, I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 960. Kathy, tell me what, or not Kathy, Jan, tell me what we have here.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you look at Senate Bill 960, on the first page, you'll notice that there is a phrase removed on line 6. And that phrase that's being removed is when necessary to meet a student's educational needs and interests. So this arose with the Bend Community School, and this phrase was added by the 95 legislature, and it was interpreted by the courts to mean that the school district needed to make some sort of affirmative discussion with students or the student's parents to discover if an alternative placement met the student's educational needs and interests.
Jan, excuse me, and Mr. Chair, what line is being removed?
This is on line 6, the first page of the bill, Senate Bill 960. And if we need to get Senator Bryant down here, that would be great.
So what are we doing with that, Jan?
We're removing that phrase.
Okay.
With this bill.
Okay.
That's one thing that we're doing.
But may I ask a question? Was it so that the school district go to court and say these kids' needs can be met, they don't have special needs, so is that why they're taking it out?
There was a couple of court cases, and it was appealed, and on appeal, the appeals court said, you didn't have this conversation, therefore, you acted improperly. And so it was Senator Bryant's desire to just take that out. He argued that when the Bend Community School first opened up, that phrase wasn't in the text, and so it was unfair to hold them to that phrase. It was basically a self-selection process for these students. The parents and the students were interested in attending Bend Community School, and they approached the school board. The school board okayed the school, and those students then went to Bend Community School and received some public funds.
Clarification, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
As I recall, though, there is currently a pending case. There's a pending case related to the same issue.
Yes, and I'm starting to lose track as to what level of court we're in now. I believe it is pending in the Court of Appeals, and their initial read on the bill was that they hadn't complied, and I still have a copy of the court case.
My note from our last meeting is that Senator Bryant said that the case is still proceeding. Written submissions are due June 1999, and then oral arguments after that.
I believe that is correct.
Okay.
And can I ask a question to you?
Sure.
So does this interfere with that case then? Does this have an effect on that case?
That's a legal question. I'm not a lawyer. Senator Bryant explained to me that there were a couple of other issues that were raised in the lawsuit that they never got to because they bumped up against this one and said, well, they didn't do it, so we haven't looked at these other issues. And so it's possible that even if this bill were to pass without that phrase, that they could then go on to examine some of those other issues that were raised and judge the merits on those other issues.
But this removes the phrase that was ruled on in the court.
Yeah.
So it would affect that ruling.
That's my understanding, but I would feel more comfortable deferring some of these legal questions to Senator Bryant.
Members, what I'd like to do with a courtesy vote of 2 or 3 or 4. We'll be in recess for 5 minutes. Is Senator Bryant available?
I believe he's in his office if he's not out in the hall.
Would you all like to have Senator Bryant come before? course.
I'm pretty clear of where I'm at, Mr. Chair.
I need people like you and Karen Duck and some others. I'll have a baby beef. I don't want a baby beef. And that's what I need.
Yeah,
we're in recess for 5 minutes.